This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 7:15. You're listening to the Evening Edition with Sharmila and Lynn. And now, a look at the announcement of the new Johor Menteri Besar and all the controversy that has ensued.
So, I suppose it's going to surprise nobody to hear that Macap State Assemblyman Dato' On Hafiz Ghazi was announced as the new Johor Menteri Besar. Having said that, it was a surprise to many at the time. I say it's not a surprise now because it's been talked about a lot. But a lot of voters and UMNO members were startled by this because for the longest time, there was another person who was actually the figurehead, right, in terms of the campaign.
Yes, so I think that's essentially what we're going to try and understand, what this says about the person who was chosen, what it indicates in terms of UMNO and where all of these pieces fit together. Keep those thoughts coming. What do you make of this choice of Menteri Besar in Johor? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now is Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Francis, thanks for joining us today. Now, how surprising a turn was this appointment, considering that BN's platform during campaigns was for Hasni to return as MB?
Yeah, it was indeed a big surprise. So if you go back to the messaging that BN made in the campaign, it was all about Hasni, the former Menteri Besar, being a very qualified candidate who could steer the state and reinvigorate the economy. And, you know, billboards across the state featured Hasni. And if you look at their campaign manifesto, very much it was about experience. It was about stability for the forthcoming 5 years. And Hasni would be at the heart of this. Actually, if you read the manifesto, it has 35 pages of text, and his photo, Hasni's photo, appears 14 times. And he's usually by himself, or he's meeting members of the public, or occasionally next to politicians at the federal level. Almost never is he next to a state-level politician. So very much from the messaging and the way people were acting, as well as the reactions of some of the UMNO leaders after this, have shown that this new leadership was very surprising.
Now, we've seen the sequence of events that led to this. It's being referred to as a palace appointment, and Pasir Gudang MP Hassan Karim even called it a violation of parliamentary democracy and constitutional monarchy. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, certainly there are, of course, strong indications that this appointment is at the behest of the Johor Palace. And, you know, you've had party insiders talking about the wishes of a higher power. And of course, the swearing in was also quite sudden. But at the heart, this is actually a very important question. Malaysia has a system of traditional rulers. And if you go back to the pre-independence period, their power and prerogatives were much more expansive than they are today. And just looking at Johor, you know, it had its own navy, its coast guard, its postal services, its prison, even had a railway, an education system, and all of these were run and funded by the Sultanate. So these figures, the traditional rulers, were around before the Malaysian constitution and before the state-level constitutions. Now, what these documents do is that they actually establish a constitutional monarchy, where actually you have a transfer of power from the sultans to elected leaders. And in turn, the traditional rulers have ceremonial and symbolic power. But when it comes to the wording on the choice of the prime minister at the national level or the Menteri Besar at the state level, it says that the constitution say that the ruler needs to appoint the person that in his judgment enjoys the confidence of the majority in the assembly. Now, this wording actually introduces an element of subjectivity, right? Because how do you determine this? So the spirit of the process is you take the advice from the party with the majority, but the wording does actually allow the monarch an element of discretion. Now, if we go back to the early sort of days after independence, you saw sultans kind of resisting MBs that they didn't like, right? So they would be appointed, and after a while there'd be tension, and after a while, probably the Menteri Besar would resign. But what we've begun to see in the last probably 15 years is a more kind of expansive role on the part of the sultans, and they start actually even before they're appointed, rejecting candidates for MB, or they start saying, you know what, we want a short list of three people, and from that short list, we're going to pick one. And then you also see the Sultan starting to talk about things like health, like education, that are out of the remit of things that are attributed to them. And this latest episode actually takes this dynamic to a whole new level, where you have a nominated leader, but someone else is chosen. So this is a very important, I wouldn't say precedent, but continuation of a trend that we've seen in the last few years.
So do you expect the Johor Palace to issue any response to this?
Not really, because then this puts the palace in a position of justifying itself. So what I expect the messaging to be is a bit different, and it's going to be calling on the people of Johor to come forward and to support the new MB. The messaging is more going to be that way rather than, you know, we've done this or that for this or that reason.
So it's been reported that 38 out of the 40 BN assemblymen had signed SDs supporting Hasni as the sole MB candidate. How relevant or important was this move?
So this is important, actually, because what this is doing is it's showing that BN wants to persist with their initial choice of an MB. And if we go back to the constitution, actually, this is an important way numerically for the party, or the coalition rather, to say this is our chosen candidate. Now, if we look at traditional West ministerial systems, this would be quite definitive. But of course, as we've said, you know, Malaysia is a system that has elements of a West ministerial system, but it also has its own uniqueness. Now, BN actually could do a few additional things if it wanted to be a little bit feisty. So the first thing is, you've mentioned that the 38 people that signed SDs, that is actually a two-thirds majority in the 56-seat Legislative Assembly. What they could start doing is saying, hey, you know what? We are going to table a motion of no confidence in this MB. Or if they want to get really exciting, they could actually start talking about amending the Constitution, which they would be able to do with a two-thirds majority. Now, I don't think they're going to do that. But these are things within the kind of rules of the game that could be contemplated.
Now, Hasni himself issued a statement about a young leader taking the helm in Johor, which basically in effect is an endorsement of On Hafiz. What did you make of the statement?
So I think it actually says that Hasni is a gentleman and a team player. So, you know, he received indications that another candidate was preferred, and he is following this decision. And in a way, he kind of makes me think of Abdullah Badawi, who voluntarily relinquished power when he felt his possession was not tenable, and he did not seek to stay on in power at all costs. So I think this actually speaks quite well of him.
So let's take a look at On Hafiz, right? What can you tell us about who he is and what he may bring to the table as a leader?
Well, on the plus side, of course, he comes from a very distinguished political family. His great-grandfather, On Jafar, was the founder of UMNO. His grandfather, Hussein On, was the third prime minister. And of course, his uncle, Hishamuddin Hussein, is a high-level UMNO leader and is also defense minister. We also know that On Hafiz was Hishamuddin Hussein's political secretary for a time. And then he also served on the state cabinet, or the Exco in Johor, for 2 years in charge of tourism, youth and sports. Now, on the con side, besides the fact that he was not the initial choice for the Menteri Besar position, his incursion into politics at the local level in Johor was a bit shaky, right? So he first ran in the Layang Layang seat in 2018, and he only won by 364 votes. Very, very narrow margin. And actually, you can see that in the campaign, they were aware of this because they moved him across to Machap, which is a much safer seat. And of course, this time he performed well and he had a comfortable majority. The other thing is, of course, you have to ask if his 4 years of experience as an ADUN and two as a member of a relatively minor portfolio are actually adequate preparation for really kind of helming a very, very large state in the Malaysian context with a very sophisticated economy, lots and lots of manufacturing operations, lots of service operations, the growth corridor, and all of these sorts of things. So it is really a very large step up.
So would this surprise appointment ultimately then impact the way the state is run and on Hafiz's ability to carry out his duties as MB?
Sure, yes. I think that there are actually really important implications for his mandate. So actually at this point in time, his legitimacy is questioned by both Barisan Nasional and the opposition, right? You quoted Hassan Karim just now. I think that the weeks ahead are going to depend on two things. First, how does he acquit himself under the spotlight? And second, how is BN going to decide to tackle this issue? So there's, a couple of fundamental things at play. The first is what you go back to the whole push of Malaysia's or Malaya's independence from Britain. There was a struggle for influence and legitimacy between the traditional rulers and then the Malay nationalist elite under UMNO. And this is quite existential and quite important. And it goes to the question, who are the leaders of the country? Is it the traditional rulers or is it the elected representatives of the people? And BN and specifically UMNO really see themselves as the elected leaders. And they see many of them, the sultans, as super important, but in a more ceremonial, constrained role. So this recent development is a pretty direct challenge to that conceptualization of leadership on the part of UMNO. But there are also another couple of, I think, pretty important questions at play at the moment. So the first is, as you know, BN and UMNO are really saying, look, there's a demand for stability and we have the wind in our sails. You know, our coalition is doing very well. We've done super well in Malacca. We've done well in Johor. And the country should go to snap elections now. So the question is, does BN really want to spend political capital in a messy and drawn out constitutional crisis at this point? So if it makes the decision, you know, look, we don't like this precedent, we're going to push back. Really what's going to happen is that attention is going to be divided. And then rather at looking towards GE15, really a lot of the country's attention and bandwidth is going to be on this political issue. And then the second thing is actually according to what we know about the sequence of sultans to become the Agong or the king, it is Johor's turn in 2024. So this means that the Sultan of Johor would be Agong, would be king, and his son, the Tunku Makota Johor, would actually be the regent. So in effect, you'd actually have two Johor monarchs to deal with, one at the national level and one at the state level. And then we've also seen in the past couple of years, you know, in circumstances where the country's elected leadership has a narrow majority or its legitimacy is contested, the monarchy is very, very influential. So I think that BN leaders, UMNO leaders are going to be weighing up these questions very carefully if they decide that they're going to try and resist in any significant way.
Francis, thanks for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Francis Hutchinson, Senior Fellow at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute, weighing in on the, all the controversy over the appointment of the new Johor Menteri Besar. If you have thoughts on that, do send them our way. The number to call, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.